Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome in, everybody. It is time for the Player Spotlight here with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. A pleasure to bring to the show a man you know and you're getting to know even better as the weeks go by. Talking about wide receiver Freddie Swain joining us on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline. Freddie, how are you, man?
I'm good. How you doing?
We're doing great. Just give me a sense. I know it's only one game under your belt, but just the comfort level. You got a season under your belt last year. Now this is year number two. You're no longer a rookie. How much more comfortable are things?
I would say they're way more comfortable. I come and have fun now. I smile, I laugh. Like, I know I did last year, but now I actually understand the plays and know why I'm running them, and I kind of understand the whole offense as a whole. So, I mean, it makes my job easier when I can come out there and just have fun rather than trying to think and play.
Hey, Fred, it seemed like it was that way for Russell, too. Is there something about this offense and the way that you run it that it makes sense? It seems like for you guys there was never like a panic moment or anything like that. Like, everything made sense to you out there.
I would say that's just the way we practice. You know, the way we practice, we come. So Sundays are really easy. Practice is always harder than the games. So we come and we just the work's been put in. So now we just got to come and have fun and execute the plays. So.
Hey, as far as picking up a new offense, what has that been like for you? I mean, it's your second year in the league. You get an offense last year. Now you got a new one this year. How difficult was it?
I would say it was easier than last year. Last year, I kind of learned this offense on an iPad and through Zoom. So to actually come and actually run the routes physically and talk through things with Russ and DK and Tyler and see the way they see things and they see the way I see things, it makes learning the offense way much easier than it was last year.
Yeah, Fred, I think you were one of those guys kind of like DJ Dallas that said, you know, you really need to be there in person. I mean, I know everybody was just accepting the situation last year, but it seems like the more guys we talk to, the more like, man, it's so much better being there in person and being able to interact with people rather than over Zoom.
Right. I would say I learn more of walking through things and asking questions physically rather than trying to learn it on a screen, which is kind of hard for me.
Hey, as far as the competition goes in preseason and all those games and everything, what was that like? I mean, it had to be interesting from your perspective to see them, you know, with only three picks, they draft a wide receiver with their first pick. So I'm wondering what's going through your mind. Is that like, all right, the competition's on? How did you feel when that was going down?
I just come and compete every day, whether somebody got drafted or not. I just come and compete, and, you know, I just try to make sure my things are taken care of on my side of the ball. So I really don't see as far as what other guys are doing. I just try to take care of everything that I need to get done, and that's how I go throughout my day.
Fred, that's a pretty special room. I mean, DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, it seems like very unselfish. Everybody kind of roots for each other, and I'd say around the league sometimes you don't get that as far as
right.
In receiver rooms.
Yeah, so like I say all the time, I was blessed to be drafted here and into a room like this with guys that are not selfish. Because, you know, even in little leagues and in high school and college, you got guys that are selfish. So, you know, to come in and to a room that when guys aren't selfish and they doesn't care who gets the ball or when they get the ball, it's just it kind of helps you learn and respect the guys in your room.
You know, Freddie, I feel like every year we hear this and sometimes you kind of just roll your eyes and go, yeah, okay. But we hear Russell this offseason worked harder than he ever has. He's in better shape than he's ever been. He's throwing the ball better than he ever has. I know you only had one season with him at this point. Does he look different to you than he did last season at all?
Right. Yeah, he's way more focused, way more locked in. The way he approaches the game is kind of second to none. That guy's real particular about winning, and his focus is on a whole nother level.
Hey, Fred, do the receiver group, you guys got any little choreographed dances planned or anything, or is that maybe that's a secret? We'll have to wait and see on Sunday.
Yeah, yeah, the way to see on Sunday.
I don't know if you saw in 2019, man, they had all kinds of stuff going on. You know, it was quite elaborate. And okay, answer this though: how much time have you guys spent practicing that kind of stuff? Yeah.
Oh, we just kind of put things together on paper today to see what we're going to do. We'll probably start practicing probably today.
Okay, so it's just like putting in a play. Like you put it on the chalkboard, you know. You draw it up, you go through a walkthrough, and then we got the final on Sunday.
That's right.
Okay. Look forward to it.
Who's the best dancer of the group?
I'd probably say DK is.
Yeah. Is he?
He's a little dance bug.
Okay. Hey, looking at this, the team you got coming up, I mean, you got the home opener. This is going to be cool for you because, yeah, there was preseason crowd, but this is real season crowd. This is when it counts, and the building's going to be packed to the rafters. How excited are you to get out there in front of the 12s?
I'm excited. You know, I've never been in a packed stadium. You know, DK and T-Lock were all, been telling me, man, it's nothing like it. So I'm waiting to see it, and I'm ready to see it.
Hey, did you tell us, Freddie, you are were you the guy that's or is it maybe DJ Dallas, what you like to do in the off season and stuff? Are you a fisherman, outdoorsman, or
what? That's DJ. I do some similar things, but that's DJ. That's more hands on.
All right, what kind of stuff do you do?
I like playing with cars, old cars.
Oh, okay, fixing up old cars.
Yeah.
Okay, what's your latest project that you've worked on?
Well, I just did my truck. Well, that's a new truck. Well, I just did that one. And then I got a 75 Caprice that I'm finna get ready to do.
So is there a dream car? Like, if I could get my hands on this car, that would make my life complete.
Probably a 72 Stingray.
Nice.
A 72 Stingray. Okay.
We like that you're old school, Freddie.
Hey, Freddie, it's always good to catch up with you, man. We really appreciate you taking the time and wish you the best of luck this weekend, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Sir, I appreciate you.
There you go, Freddie Swain of your Seattle Seahawks. You can tell they're getting ready. They're fired up in that room, whatever room that was, for the Titans. Titans are in trouble. You can hear it.
Yeah, there's a little background noise there. It's funny. We were interviewing on the huddle. We were interviewing Will Dissly, and then when I go in there to listen to Freddie Swain, and I can hear Will in the background. He's like, "Go Hawks!" Like, Will, be quiet.
Yeah, we're trying to do some stuff here, trying to have a conversation. I wonder if they just pack them all into a room, a big open. Sounds like they're in the shower. There's an echo. There's a big echo there.
I'm not sure what's going on. If there's a bank of phones there when they, this is when they all, you know, basically it's their lunch hour. So
yeah,
you know,
maybe they're in that cafeteria. It's a nice place.
It could be, but you know, I was telling you earlier about Will Dissly and how it's always unusual. It was Wade LeBlanc. I remember Wade LeBlanc, pitcher for the Mariners, came out to Edgar's early one time, and I was waiting around for everybody to show up, and he got there early. And so we just started talking, and he started asking me a bunch of questions and stuff. What about you in the NFL? You know, what was the travel like? And, you know, how's the pension thing going and all this? And I'm like, it's pretty unusual when you have – you're supposed to interview these guys. They're used to being asked questions.
Yeah.
And they turn it around on you.
And they flip the script on you and ask you questions.
But Will Dissly's done that like twice to me, where I was telling you I was walking through the lobby down in Vegas at the hotel with him, and he's asking me about my off season and, you know, where did I go? And
that's nice.
What kind of trips? I love that.
He's interested.
Yeah.
Interested in you.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just interesting because usually those guys at a young age, they get into, you know, a mode where they're used to being asked questions. And I just think it's really cool. I think it speaks to the kind of guy that Will Dissly is. Mm-hmm. He's really just a regular guy. I don't know if that's maybe why they call him Uncle Will. But, man, he looked really good. And as Jake pointed out, Jake Heaps, in his film room session, he ran a little out and up that cleared out Gerald Everett to come across and catch a touchdown. And, you know, he did a couple of other little things. Another thing I was going to mention about Russ, there was a throw that he made where he checked it down. I think it was to Carson. DK was maybe open on a crossing route, and Russ could have probably pulled it off, but he took the easier throw. And so I feel like he's being really measured the way he's starting out. And, you know, he's taken the deep shots, but I thought that was an interesting play, and I can't tell you exactly when that was, but there was a chance for him to make a little bit more of a risky throw further downfield, and he didn't. He opted for the check down. So I feel like that's what this offense brings for Russ. And I think, again, like I said, you just never saw him get desperate or anything. So it looks really good. And again, you know, if you're looking at a guy like Freddie Swain and then saying, okay, who else do they have? Chris Carson, DK Metcalf. I mean, yeah, these are all a bunch of good players that are extra meeting guys that it's going to be a tough prep for Tennessee because, like I said, there is a couple of categories on defense they weren't great at. One thing they were good at last year is taking the ball away and also hanging on to it. They had the number one turnover ratio in the NFL.
How much are you, as a team, when you go in and you're preparing for your opponent for the upcoming week and you're watching film and here's what they like to do and here are their tendencies and things like that. Now, obviously, there's only one game worth of film to look at currently with this group. How much are you taking away from what the opponent did, like the Cardinals? How much will they look at, well, Cardinals did this, we're going to do that. Or this is how they reacted, that's how we're going to do it.
Yeah.
Or is it just, hey, keep that in mind, but we run our defense. This is how we play, and we just apply it to whoever the opponent is. Do you look at game tape of what the Cardinals did
and
worked out well and then say, okay, we're gonna try that?
Yeah, and I don't know if I heard it or just read it, but Pete Carroll was talking about the game plan that Arizona had.
I was really attracted by Arizona's play. I mean, they were spectacular. You know, they on offense, they were all over the place, they did a million different things. Defensively, they created so many big plays right from the beginning. The pass rush was, you know, it was pretty well focused on one guy, and he was unstoppable in the game, and it affected the entire play of the Titans. So just overall, they just got out ahead and stayed ahead and just kept going. You know, there was no fluke to that one. They really played great football and made the plays that they needed to, and it was a hard day for Tennessee to get going. You know, that's not the way they want to play. You know, they were down 17-0 in the first quarter, you know. So anyway, so you got to give a lot of credit to the Cardinals. They looked terrific.
So do you think he's looking, sitting there with Ken Norton and his coaches and going, okay, guys, hey, man, do you see what the Cardinals did here and in this situation? Or do you see what they did here? Let's try to implement that.
Well, I don't think they change anything, but they just notice what the weaknesses are. And then, okay, within our scheme, what can we do that will exploit that? You're not going to change anything. So
you're not going to copy. You're not going to ape anything they did.
Maybe a few things. You know, that's the thing about the NFL. They always call it the copycat league. Every time that we would play an opponent and you'd go out to practice the next week and the defensive players, I remember standing around going, yeah, I recognize that play that we're running now. So like Chuck Knox would take things that beat us and put it into his offense and vice versa, same thing on defense. So, yeah, there's lots of people that, you know, or lots of teams, I should say, that that do that kind of thing. You'd be foolish not to. I mean, look, if it works again, and especially if they don't, you know, if the opponent doesn't recognize what you're doing, and that's really valuable. So hopefully, yeah, they're able to get something out of what Arizona did. But, I mean, Chandler Jones is just – it's amazing. You were talking about his family, Bob.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty good gene pool.
Yeah.
Holy smokes.
Really good. Yeah, so, another brother in the NFL, and his other brother is the UFC light heavyweight champion of the world. And,
right.
And or was, relinquished the title, fighting as a heavyweight now, John Jones. But, yeah, I digress.
Yeah, so I'm getting in the cage here.
I'm getting ready. I got all the info you need, man.
Yeah, but, I mean, that's he's just a unique talent, obviously, because nobody's – I mean, I think he's got – more sacks than anybody since entering the league. Don't forget about J.J. Watt, too.
Well, and that's why I asked, do they try to mimic or copy, if you will, what that team was doing, but also at the same time understanding, well, we don't really have a Chandler Jones. We don't, and that's not a knock on who they've got. They've got a collection of guys who can all get it done in different ways, but they don't have that player. So that's why I asked, would you still try to mimic or lift what they do without having the same level of talent or same type of talent on your roster?
Yeah, I don't think there was anything fancy about the way that Chandler Jones got those sacks. You know, he just beat people off the edge. And do we have a guy that can do it? And it's a good question because, look, is Daryl Taylor that guy? I just don't – I mean, I don't mean to exclude Carlos Dunlap because he really is a great player. But, you know, he's getting on in his age and his career, and, you know, he's had a really good career. But, I mean, is he a perennial Pro Bowler? Not really. And, you know, as far as, like, having a dynamic pass rush, maybe Daryl Taylor's that guy. You know, there's a big question mark. Didn't play last year. He's now has technically one game under his belt in the NFL. So, but I just wonder if that he can be that guy. But if you do have that kind of player, yeah, you try to isolate him as much as you can. You try to do things where you can, you know, fake a blitz so that the, you know, the running back who maybe would normally chip will come up and, you know, get fooled a little bit by the defensive scheme and then be late to get in the block. You see the Seahawks now are walking up in the A gap, so, you know, they'll have a guy right over the center, and Bobby and Brooks a lot will walk up like they're going to blitz, and
right.
That sometimes will hold a back or hold a guard so that a guy on the outside has a chance to get home. So, you know, those kinds of things, yeah, there's lots of copycat going on. But, you know, their offensive line still, I mean, I mentioned that they were, you know, disjointed because Quisenberry, who played right tackle, was playing left. And then the two guys that had the COVID protocol, it was Nate Davis and Ben Jones. So, yeah, maybe they can get after that. And, you know, if they can get to Tannehill and, like I said, get to Derrick Henry early, you know, like Chandler Jones did, and before he gets ahead of steam. But, you know, I mean, I think it's going to be a physical game. Either way, I think you're going to see a team that's not like they're angry and, oh, man, we're going to come out and really try. Everybody's trying
right.
Every week. But
maybe more attention to detail or something.
Yeah, and, yeah, maybe more intense. Maybe
gap integrity, Dave.
Yeah, well, what about Taylor Lewan? He said he was too fired up.
Yeah, that didn't sound like he had an adrenaline dump.
Right.
Now, the other thing, let me ask you one more. And that is, you know, in baseball, we always talk about the adjustments that are made. If a hitter, especially an unknown, like a young hitter, let's say Kelnick was just tearing up the league.
Right.
Well, pitchers eventually adjust. They find out where's the hole in his swing, and we're going to pitch him this way. And it's the constant chess game.
Yeah.
You see that in the NFL with sure. you brought up Daryl Taylor. It's only one game. It's not like he went nuts and sacked the quarterback 10 times, but maybe enough to catch the eye of their offensive coordinator going, okay, here's how we're going to handle this guy because he's shown he can get some things done. So here's how we're is it the chess game now? He's gonna have somebody approaching him differently in this game, and he's gonna have to figure out how to get through that.
Yeah, well, I would say this, like, Daryl Taylor doesn't quite have that coming off the edge, you know, round the corner move that a lot of the really good pass rushers do. So that tackle did not need to sit back in Indianapolis, that mm-hmm. guy that got knocked on his butt, you know. So I feel like he kind of fell for that a little bit when, you know, you don't really – he's probably not going to beat you off the edge just yet if you're a good player. And if you're a good player like Taylor Lewan, yeah, you're like, I can handle him on the outside. I've made that block on a million different guys a million different times. But, you know, he made a mistake because – you know, he sat back, and I feel like, yeah, that's probably something that you're not going to be able to get away with. Like you said, you're kind of figuring out the guy's repertoire and what he's doing, kind of like figuring out a pitcher, like you said.
Yeah.
So, yeah, those kinds of things. Well, and also, the guy's in his rookie year, basically, so he's not.
Yeah, I was just wondering how much attention he may get in sure. film room.
Oh, I think he will. It's just that, you know, if you're an experienced guy, you're like, okay, I have yet to see this guy really convince me that he can beat me off the edge every time. So that's where you maybe the youth comes into play a little bit against the Seahawks. But, yeah, their front seven I think is really important because I just picture this team coming downhill and Derrick Henry running at you. And, I mean, he's not one of those guys where you can go sideways as a linebacker and catch a block and then all of a sudden now you're taking on him. And the guard, I mean, he's going to fall forward for 8-9 yards if that happens. So they're going to have to be physical on defense.
I like the game plan that the Cardinals had in that they had a plan of getting up early to eliminate the carries. That seemed like a good plan. It worked out well.
that worked really good.
Let's put them in a hole early and force them to throw the ball,
yep.
Which still, by the way, I'm kind of joking around, but that's still sort of a daunting task to defend that because you've got two guys, and I know the Cardinals did it, and I don't know what happened in that game. Just looking at the box scores, but when you've got A.J. Brown and Julio Jones there, that's a scary tandem. You know, we talk yeah. about DK and Tyler. That's a scary tandem. This is right up there. This is in that conversation amongst best tandems in the entire league if you're a cornerback, I'm probably not sleeping that well the night before, thinking, all right, how are we going to handle this guy?
Well, and you know, I'm looking at Tannehill's numbers, and he's just a different quarterback in Tennessee. I mean, he's 67% completion in 3 years in Tennessee, 62% in 5 years in Miami. So, and then the touchdown ratio to or touchdown to interception ratio is more like 80-20 mm-hmm. touchdowns to interceptions, whereas before it was like 60-40. So, and then, you know, he was sacked 248 times in Miami. That's in 5 years, but only 61 sacks, and he's 18-9 in 3 years, and he was 42-46 in 5 years in Miami. So the Tannehill is he's a different player now. Is he? You know, I don't think anybody has him as a top 10 quarterback, but but he's a good quarterback, and he's gotten better. And obviously, it's nice having those two weapons, and they invested in Julio Jones and got a great draft choice. I saw he was. I think he was drafted. AJ Brown was drafted before DK. I think about
heck of a player,
15
man.
Or 16 slots. I watched last year a game against Baltimore where he and they played them in the playoffs too. But he must have broken 7 tackles that I saw, and on a touchdown he broke 3 tackles. This guy is he's like the DK Metcalf of the Tennessee Titans, man.
He's their version.
Yeah,
and then you throw in Julio Jones, another big guy with great hands and a tremendous track record.
Julio Jones has, like, if you look at the number of games he's played in and his yardage, he's good for, like, 95 yards per game. So, yeah, he's one of the all-time greats and kind of the gold standard in receivers for a number of years there, you know, from about 2012 to 16, 17, just really good.
It's amazing because you look at A.J. Brown, he's listed at 6'1", 225. He looks bigger than that to me.
He does. Well, and he's
in Julio, by the way, 6'3", 220 is what he's listed at.
Yeah, and I think he, you know, like he could wrap his hand around your entire head, Bob. Like
yeah, but that's not anybody could do that. Okay, it's the size of a softball.
All right, Lefkos.
Anybody, kids could come up and wrap their hand around my head. It's not a big undertaking. So we'll see. It's going to be a dynamic matchup, though. I'm just really interested to see how that goes down this week, and can't wait for the home crowd to go nuts out there. Meanwhile, Russell Wilson has got himself a chance to achieve a historic milestone this weekend. We'll tell you what we're talking about next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Seahawks getting set to take on the Titans this weekend, and there's something on the line there outside of just a regular win for the Seahawks, and Russell Wilson specifically, is he can reach a milestone, his 100th career regular season win. How about that? In just that would be his 146th start.
Yep.
So only two have done it faster, Tom Brady and Joe Montana.
How about that?
Tom Brady did it in 131 regular season games, Joe Montana in 139 regular season games. So, I mean, to be mentioned in any way, shape, or form in a positive way with people like that is huge. And here's Pete Carroll just talking about on what Russ's journey has meant to him.
And he's just getting warmed up. You know, that's what it feels like. Really, I'm really excited about it. We'll always be excited about the way we worked. I mean, all the way back to the first day I took him out. We had the hoop used to be outside and the building on the kind of the parking lot out there. And I took him outside to talk to him about starting his first game, you know, and tell him he was going to be the starter. And I told him, I said to him at that time, I said, you know, over the time that we're going to do this, you and I are going to do this a lot together because you're going to be the guy they're always going to talk to and talk about, and I am too. And so we need to do this really, really well, you know. And we both kind of just took the challenge and let's go. And he was a young pup at the time, you know, but he was kind of maybe wondering what I was talking about. But it's turned out that way, you know. Obviously, he's been in the center of everything and he's handled it beautifully over the long haul of this.
Just a young pup out there shooting hoops, being told he's going to become the starter over Matt Flynn.
That's right.
Yeah, we paid Matt Flynn. What did they pay him? $15 million? $10 million? I can't remember what it was, but he got paid a lot of money not to play.
I remember at the time he was a backup, and then wasn't he like dating Miss Louisiana or something like that?
Might have been.
And I was like, this kid's on top of the world right
now. I just remember he had a couple of big games, one specifically against the Detroit Lions when he was backing up Aaron Rodgers. He threw 6 touchdown passes, and that led to his legend, the legend of Matt Flynn, and you got to get him. You feel like that's happened a few times. And Scott Mitchell. Scott Mitchell was another guy. As a backup, they have these big moments, and then they land the big deal, become a starter, and it doesn't really happen.
Who was the guy down in Arizona that KC used to talk about all the time? Kevin Kolb.
Yep.
It was another one. Yeah,
Philadelphia.
Look, you know, we always talk about it's a copycat league. That's what happens, too. You know, yeah. they all of a sudden think, okay, let's go that route. So
you shine in a game, you get your opportunity as a backup, and you shine, and every other team goes, oh, who was that?
Yeah.
Who's that diamond in the rough just wasting away on that team's bench? Let's go get him.
So you said Tom Brady and Joe Montana were the two?
Yeah, Tom Brady did it in 131 games, Joe Montana in 130. These are regular season games.
Right. So we do a Russell stat of the week on the keys to the game before the broadcast.
You want to borrow this one?
No, think about it. But I found my own last week. So here's Peyton Manning and Russell Wilson in their first 9 years. Okay, Russ has six more wins. They both played the same number. It's 144, I think. You said 146.
This will be, if he gets it, yeah. This
146.
Is 146th
yeah.
start.
So 144 games in 9 years. Both played the same number. Russ, six more wins and seven less losses. Okay, and then 555 less attempts in 9 years to get most of this done. He's got a better completion percentage. He's only got eight less touchdowns. So Peyton Manning has 275. He has 267. This is going into the season, not counting mm-hmm. the other day. And then interceptions. Russ has 58 less interceptions than Peyton Manning in that same period of time. So and if he gets to 40 this year, he would surpass Manning's first 10 years. So for the most touchdowns in NFL history in their first 10 years. So if he gets 40, which he did last year, and I'm not saying he will, but he's off to an awfully good start.
Yeah.
Well, and the other thing is you get the extra game, too. And I'm not sure how much they're going to factor that into the record books and everything. But, yeah, it's just amazing, you know, the stat you read. It's whenever he is mentioned, it's in the same breath as Joe Montana, Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know who's almost never in there is Elway. I think he was one of the great – like he had 59% completion percentage. Yeah,
did he not set many records? I mean, I think he's a guy that everybody just looked at and just said he's an unbelievable talent, cannon arm. He's elusive. He was a pain in the butt to bring down.
He's a winner.
But did he just not accumulate the numbers?
Yeah. Well, and I'll tell you what, when the Shanahan got there and they won the two Super Bowls, they got a run game finally. And he just never had a good running game there.
That's back when it seemed when they would just plug in anybody and they would.
Yeah.
That's right?
Alex Gibbs that Mark Schlereth was talking about. And that was the time when Mark Schlereth was there. Yeah. And it was like Orlando Gary. I'm trying to remember some of the names that after running backs came through.
They weren't highly touted backs. Right. They didn't come out of college. I remember it just seemed like literally you could plug in. Yeah. Joe Schmagegi, and he's running for 100 yards a game.
Schmagegi, yeah. I think he got 100 yards in the first quarter. It was Terrell Davis. That was the first one. And then after that came a bunch of different names that they just switched in and got yardage. So, anyway, yeah, that'll be helpful to Russ, hopefully, if he can get something like that going. But, again, just the numbers are amazing when you look at Russell Wilson. And mostly it's about winning, and that's all he really cares about. But it's just amazing how robotic he is about it.
Yeah. Well, and like Manning, early in his career, he played every game.
Right.
He was an Iron Man until the neck, whatever happened with his neck and required all those. I think he had four procedures on that neck.
Mm-hmm.
But before that, he was a guy that just never missed a game.
Yeah.
You know, so that, you know, you don't look at him as a, you know, he's kind of tall and lanky. Russell's very solid looking, very stout looking. So you don't expect that. But that's another huge thing for especially that position to be available every single week and just know we got our guy there.
Yeah. You know, you see the sack the other day. Well, it wasn't a sack. I think they blew it dead maybe. But the one where Monet lands on top of Carson Wentz. Do you ever see Russ taking – I mean, the hit in the NFC Championship game in 2014 just pretty much proved that Russ has a bulletproof head.
Because was that the Clay Matthews hit?
Clay Matthews hit on a return. I have no idea how he stayed conscious.
He didn't see it. And that you always hear about this again, referring back to fighting, but it's it's always the punch you don't see that hurts you the most.
Okay.
And it's not so much that it's harder than any punches. You don't have the ability to ready yourself, to roll with it, to adjust to what's coming. It's just...
Or strengthen your neck muscles, maybe.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, you can adjust. You can roll with a punch. You can roll with a hit in football. You see a guy coming at you, you're going to you're gonna duck that shoulder. You're going to keep your head out of it, perhaps. So when you're you're completely unsuspecting and you get hit, it doesn't even have to be that hard and can be really damaging. So the fact that he did get hit really hard and didn't see any of it, you could tell by his how he was approaching that play, he had no idea that guy that Matthews was even there.
Just
and unload. I mean, that's probably a hit that you as a defensive player dream about, right? Just like, I've got him lined up. I've got him in my sights, and he doesn't even see me. I could see drool coming out of your mouth.
That's right. Well, and especially on an interception, and that was right after Russ had thrown an interception, one of the four that he had tried to target Jermaine Kearse with. But, yeah, he was just trying to line him up. And, you know, I don't know if he meant to hit him in the head, but I know he did get fined and penalized and all that stuff. But, geez, today
you think he should have?
Well, no, of course not. And also, I think...
Still, there's never been a penalty on defense you thought was warranted.
Yeah. Today, they'd haul him off to jail.
Oh, yeah. He'd be out of the league.
Right. So, anyway, Russ is just... He doesn't seem to take big hits.
No.
You know, you don't see him. Now, some of those weird hits, like... He's also rubber because, man, the linebacker from San Francisco that got his knee.
Yeah.
You saw the Ndamukong Suh thing was on his ankle. That was, you know, that looked... Like, maybe that hurt a little bit or whatever. But the knee one was like, oh, man, that's – to me, it looked like a blown knee.
Well, and he also had the pec injury that year. He had three injuries that year. I mean,
Tough dude.
Yeah, as much as people want to mock him or make fun of his he's kind of goofy here or there. Whatever it is, he is tough as nails. There's just not even a debate about what that guy has endured throughout his career physically and still found a way to get out there on the field every single day.
Maybe he'd be a good fighter.
He could be, yeah. I mean, he takes a heck of a shot. He knows how to roll with them. That's the beauty of his game is he does see it, and you see him slide at the right time. You see him roll with it. He rarely gets hit clean where you're like, ooh, man, that hurt.
Maybe you should get him up in the karate cage.
Soon as I see what a karate cage looks like, I'll get him up in there. All right. Coming up, how many Mariners will play in the hometown All-Star game? We'll talk about that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
So we talked to Katie Griggs of the Seattle Mariners earlier in the show about the big announcement. The 2023 Major League Baseball All-Star Game will be happening at T-Mobile Park. And, you know, we were all reflecting on what it was like back in 01 and how much fun it was and what's in store this time. One of the things that was unique about the first go-around is you had 8 Seattle Mariners that were All-Stars that year. How many do you think now, we still got to go through the rest of this season and next season, and then half of 23 to get it figured out, so this could be a vastly different looking team by then.
Mm-hmm.
But let's just pretend the majority of the guys that are here now will be there for the most part, you know, maybe except for the older Joe Smith and maybe Kyle Seager won't be there. But for the most part, let's just say it's basically this group, but much more productive and more mature. Who do you think's there? Who do you think's an all-star from this team?
JP, right off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm.
Logan Gilbert.
It's a good one.
Here's a long shot. Kyle Lewis.
Man. I want you to be right, man.
I know.
I do. I've really got a fear about the knee that's been worked on multiple times. He's a young guy, and it's already been really problematic. I hope it's more – we always talk about is it chronic or is it unlucky when we talk about guys that have been hurt a lot, whether it's football or any other sport. I'm really hoping he's just unlucky, that it's just been just a string of bad luck, and it's not a chronic thing. It's not something that's going to have to be managed, and he can only play, you know, 95 games a year, whatever. I hope it's – I really, for our sake as fans, but more importantly, for his sake as a guy who looks to have an incredibly bright future, I don't want that to be part of his story.
Yeah. Well, and then I'll throw Ty France in there.
Yep, that's a good one. And Mitch Haniger. Is Mitch going to be here? Mitch is – he signed through this season. He's arbitration eligible next year, and then a free agent in 23.
And Mitch, he doesn't make that much money.
He's making $3 million.
Yeah.
$3 million. In baseball dollars, that is a pittance for what he's producing. Over 30 home runs, a career year. That's a fantastic bargain for this team right now.
Yeah. What about, you look at Julio Rodriguez, too early for him, some of the young pitchers. Yeah, is Kelnick in there?
I hope so. I mean, his potential and hype and, you know, evaluations of him as a player say he should be.
I'm going to go instead with Taylor Trammell.
Really?
Remember him, Bob?
I do remember
that guy.
I'm still a big fan of him. I retweeted one of his home. He hit a game-winning walk-off home run for the Rainiers a couple nights ago. Yeah, and he was just as joyful as always. That smile and just, yeah.
It was his birthday on Monday, too.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, I wished him a happy birthday.
There you go.
That's your.
I'm pretty sure he saw it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he knows who you are, Bob, since you've been stalking him.
He won't respond to my messages.
Did he wish you happy birthday?
He did not. That was really one of the bigger disappointments of some of the people that did not wish me happy birthday.
Yeah, you should tweet out your birthday and to him and just say, just so you know, in the future.
Just, you know, if you want to like be thoughtful, return the favor.
I'll do the same thing to Cody Barton.
Yeah, yeah. It'll be good. But he would be great. I wish for success for that guy above more than most players, because he just seems like he deserves it. Just a quality dude. So hopefully he would be part of it. If I were betting, I wouldn't bet on it, but I'm pulling for that to happen. Kelnick's an interesting one, because I'm wondering if this year has given people faith in him or sort of robbed them of some potential they thought he had. Like, maybe they're disappointed with, I mean, he's hitting under 200 and he's had some gaffes in the outfield. I mean, in totality, it's been a pretty rocky season for him. There have been moments of success, but if we're just looking at it in as a whole, yeah, not great.
Yeah. Well, and not at the plate, that's for sure. But I'll tell you what, I was watching him run the bases the other day. He can fly.
Yeah, he can run.
And he's got a good arm.
He's a good arm. He's got the raw skills. I mean, we've seen it on display.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of him stringing it together, just doing that game in, game out. Like, he'll make plays in the outfield where you're going, man, he's guy covers some ground, read the ball well. And then he's had some other plays in the outfield where you're going, what are you doing, man? I don't even know what you were looking at there.
Yeah, and it's just getting used to. And I know one of them was in Houston and, you know, getting used to that ballpark. And I know he had a major gaffe there. And then he had the whole thing where he ran into Bowers. And, you know, and you're seeing his emotions. I mean, if he had, like, Taylor Trammell type of reactions, I think people wouldn't judge him as much. I feel like people are judging Kelnick because he comes off as maybe a little bit of a spoiled brat or whatever, but they just don't know him yet, you know? And I think he hasn't had a chance to endear himself to the fans quite enough. And, you know, I feel like he's being competitive, and that's just part of it. But, yeah, there's been a little bit of blowback on the text line here about him every once in a while.
Let's see. This one, 253, Dare to Dream. 2023 M's All-Stars, Flexen.
Ah, forgot about Flex.
Kelnick, Gilbert, Seawald, Toro, forgot about him, Crawford, Lewis, and Marco with Service as the manager.
Wow, that's a lot. You know, I thought about Seawald, but he's 30.
And relievers are just so up at it.
He could
just face plant next year for no reason whatsoever.
All right.
Just, we won't be able to explain it, but it may happen. It's just the nature of being in the bullpen. And then Marco, two more years, I don't know. It's going to be interesting. I don't think they'll have eight. How about that? How about that for a bold prediction?
Yeah.
They won't have eight.
So it was Edgar Martinez, John Olerud, Jeff Nelson, Brett Boone, Mike Cameron, Freddie Garcia, Kazuhiro Sasaki, and Ichiro Suzuki.
Man.
That's 2001. How about somebody from another team that's on the Mariners that we're getting in a free agent move next year?
Right.
Or that year.
Maybe it's a Trevor Story. Maybe it's a Seager that's not named Kyle. Maybe who knows what they're going to go out. I don't know who they have their eyes on, but it better be something of that caliber. That's all I'm saying. All right, coming up, we'll talk some football. The professor, John Clayton, is going to join us next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.